ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Nunes' hands are down, and she's walking Ronda down. She tags her again.
Over and over. Amanda Nunes.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another. But I'm going to get the job done.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Austin imitated but never duplicated. 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I'm your ever so modest host. I'm also an award-winning boxing writer and a four-time Golden Glove boxing champion. So allegedly, supposedly, I know a little bit about boxing. But straight up, I think the fan knows more. So I will open up the toll-free just for the fans at the top of the hour, give you an opportunity here. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. That's the toll-free. Of course, there's also the studio text line. That number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Well, we're hours away from Double S, Shakur Stevens. Of course, the kid, 130 pounds, that can really fight. I mean, he looks like the sky is the limit for him. But we'll see what he can do tonight. Of course, that'll be on ESPN, brought to you by Master Bob Arum. Of course, coming to us from Las Vegas, Nevada. And of course, they are starting to break out now with fans. I think that's really cool. So fans are happening in boxing. Fans are happening in MMA. Fans are going to musical concerts. Fans are coming back to the world. Life is starting to come back to normal, slowly but surely. And I hope that your world is looking good today, this Saturday, of course, June the 12th. 2021, June the 12th, a big day in boxing history, 1978, of course, Kenny Norton and my man, Larry Holmes, the mayor of Eastern Pennsylvania, duking it out for the heavyweight title, 15 rounds, and of course, 1989, one of my former training partners, Sugar Ray Leonard, gets a controversial draw with Tommy Hearns after getting dropped, not once, but twice. Straight up, spit happens in boxing. You're tuned to Ring Talk, Live Worldwide, and WBC Boxing TV.
Thank you, Pedro. You want to run tomorrow?
I'll be right. You going to run tomorrow morning?
Yeah, 5:30.
Sunday. I'm leaving tomorrow at 10. I'll run with you tomorrow morning.
Okay, babe. Okay.
Running with Sugar Ray Leonard, 1989. Of course, that set up the Thomas Hearns fight. Of course, he and I trained together for about 10 days down there in South Florida, West Palm Beach to be exact. I think it was like some big golf course, this big lofty golf course. All these rich dudes around us. Of course, there was this group of black fighters, Ray Leonard, the camp, of course, led by Top Cat Mike Trainer, the Washington DC attorney, but for the most part, Ollie Dunlop was there. I mean, it was like Ray's home away from home for about a month and a half down there, of course, training for Tommy Hearns. And of course, he had his soon to be wife, Bernadette, was there. They weren't married yet. Ray was still married to Juanita, so I guess there was a little, a little fooling around going on there. But the bottom line is Ray Leonard was there with his wife, and he ended up marrying her. They've had a couple of kids. Bottom line is they've had them together now, God, since 1987. More power to them. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Ray Charles Leonard. He's 1A. You know, people knock him, but the bottom line is you may not like his attitude, but you cannot say that he didn't throw some of the best shots in the entire history of boxing. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb right now, and I say that he would have handily beat Sugar Ray Robinson. He would have beaten Sugar Ray Robinson and beat him as a welterweight. That's considered the best welterweight of all time. Ray Robinson, well, not really. I think Ray Leonard is. And, of course, had Tommy Hearns went out there and fought the fight he was supposed to fight against Ray Leonard, he would be the greatest welterweight of all time, but he choked. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We take it to the Ring Talk phone lines. Of course, a guy that doesn't choke, boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer. Sock, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, brother. How's everything with yourself?
Pretty good. Double S, Shakur Stevenson in action tonight. What does he bring to the dance?
Well, he is the heir apparent. You know, he is, he has the number one company behind him, Top Rank. He's got the Olympic background, winning the silver medal in 2016. He has looked really impressive against opposition that he's kind of has supposed to have looked impressive against. He's having a somewhat of a step up tonight, against a fighter from the low key, boxing hotbed of Namibia. You know, they've had a couple of good fighters recently, Harry Simon and the gentleman who I'm going to butcher his name that lost to Terence Crawford in Kambu, the 140-pound champ.
You had to reach on that one.
Yeah. But it should be a good step up test for Shakur Stevenson, who inside the ring has tremendous acumen. Outside the ring, not so much. But he's
a street kid. But I sort of look at him as like a dopey street kid. And what I mean by the dopey street kid is that, and I don't mean he's not a dope, he's just not the brightest bulb on the Christmas tree.
You know what I think Shakur Stevenson is? And I don't know him, so I'm gonna assume, and we all know what happens when you assume, but let's face it. Shakur Stevenson is an elite level athlete, right? And he's kind of like the guy that knew the street guys and was around the street element, but really wasn't about that life. That's what Shakur Stevenson is. And he needs to grow up. I don't know if he caught the press conference. He says, I'm not losing to a cop. This is for the culture.
Oh.
You know, so, yeah. And I'm thinking, someone at Top Rank needs to sit down with this young man and say, that's a really good way of alienating a fan base that will spend money to see you fight. The culture will not. That's number one. And what does that mean? Like, is this fight for the hood? Like, I'm going to whip up a cop. I mean, it's like you're disparaging your opposition when Top Rank and your managers are going to try to sell us the fact that you're in a credible fight and you're dogging the guy basically as just a part-time fighter.
Okay.
I mean, it's just stupid, you know, but inside the ring, the kid is a beast and has tremendous potential.
I remember, I can't find the article, but a guy from the Reno Gazette said I was guilty of police brutality. And he was talking about me whooping up on guys in the ring. I went up to Carson City and I smoked these guys. I mean, there was three guys. I went through three guys in 2 days. Just went through them. Mm-hmm. I mortared them. None of them went to distance. Okay. I think one of them went into the second round. That was about it. And the guy from the Reno Gazette, a big chunky guy. I think his name was Jim Jenkins. He goes, you know, you are guilty of police brutality. And I was, anyway, yeah, that was a great weekend with no doubt about that. Now, Shakur Stevenson in action, of course, that's ESPN tonight. Clarissa Shields, you know, I'm not one of her biggest fans. And Amanda Serrano, of course, the other female fighter is considered one of the, those two are considered maybe the two best pound for pound. Maybe Katie, maybe a couple of guys from, ladies from the UK can dispute that. But the bottom line is they both won MMA matches last night. What does that mean?
You know what? What does it mean is that they are really good athletes and deep down, you know, they are fighters at the end of the day. I am in the same boat with you. I'm not a fan of Clarissa Shields. You know, her mouth is really like, you know, extra a lot of times, but I got to give her props. You know, she fought someone who was there for her to lose, but she was put in that first round in a bad situation. And, you know, she clearly showed that she's been in training. She's in a good camp. I believe she works out with, the girl from New Mexico. Oh boy. My amnesia's kicking in. But anyway, you could tell she's
Holly Holmes,
MMA career. Holly Holmes, yes. Thank you, sir, for the save. You can tell that she's taking this serious and she is a great athlete and she showed a lot of heart in that fight and she took care of business. And hopefully, I'm sure that the ultimate goal for her is to debut on UFC. Dana White needs stars and Amanda Nunes needs a dance partner. So that could be a really mega fight maybe next year.
You know, he doesn't pay them. He pimps them. And I don't want, you know, and people, you know, now listen, I understand that people should have the opportunity to do whatever they want to do. And I'm down with that. But you know, when you get kicked in the head and elbowed in the head and things like that, the residual effects are probably gonna be a little bit more than somebody hitting you with an 8 ounce padded or a 10 ounce padded glove. I'm just, that's just common sense is going to tell you that. Okay. So these people are put in death matches after death match, and Dana White pays them a few bucks. And by the time, there's no longevity. I mean, the longest heavyweight title run was 3 title defenses by one champion. Think about that. They've been in action since 1993. The most a heavyweight champion can defend his title was 3 times. In other words, longevity ain't in the cards.
Yeah, I mean, Dana White kind of follows the NFL's model that the sport is the star. The event is the star. And the athletes that are taking part in this brutality that we are all guilty of having some sort of pleasure watching, they're secondary, you know. So that's why they dress it up with the music, you know, the hot ring card girls, the rambunctious announcers like Joe Rogan, you know, and the athletes, the action that happens in the ring is kind of secondary. That's why, you know, it's like they suppress their stars. Although, is it ironic that their biggest stars happen to be white? Conor McGregor, who's a multimillionaire, Ronda Rousey, and before that, Brock Lesnar. You know, so I think that's something to do with it as well. But Dana White is a criminal for the way he pays his top guys. John Bone Jones has never made a $1 million payday.
Ooh.
That's crazy.
Ooh, and you know, and I've compared this to my time as a policeman in San Francisco, having known guys that had stables of women on the street. I mean, you come in contact with these guys. If they were paying them 8 to 10 cents on a dollar, okay, those girls would be on the first bus to Denver.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a union. It's not a union, you know. But then again, Dana doesn't have any competition. You know, if there was an organization with as much money as Dana has behind him and a major network, things would change, you know. I mean, I know Bellator's around, but they get the guys once they're past their prime, or they have the guys cut their teeth there, and then they move on, you know. So that's another big factor as well.
You know what's funny? Scott Coker runs Bellator, and they've got the MTV. They used to have the MTV TV type of money backing them up, so the money was there. They can never deliver the product. I mean, and I always wanted to, like, choke Scott, because I've been around him a few times, and it's like common sense. You do certain things. He seemed to do the opposite every time. When it came time to get something to write, he got it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, someone like Dana White, he kind of reminds me of, like Vince McMahon in a sense, you know, in the sorts, you know. The guy's passionate, you know, he is his product 24/7, you know, he is dedicated, and he has built a brand, you know. I mean, UFC before him was basically another step up from the tough man competitions, you know, and he put some organization to it, and they are what they are, the top dog in MMA. Just wish the guys got paid better.
Oscar De La Hoya talking about a comeback, weighing somewhere around 165 pounds, of course, hasn't done any cocaine maybe since yesterday or the day before yesterday, so I guess he's in training. Bottom line is, we'll talk about that and more when WBC Boxing TV and Ring Talk Live Worldwide returns. You are tuned to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, of course, 1,000 other internet platforms. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC with Pedro Fernandez. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
Hey, Pedro, how you doing? And good evening to everybody out there listening to the show.
My man, Genaro Hernandez. We will talk about him in depth in about 40 minutes past the hour when I bring in his brother, Rudy Hernandez, of course. Genaro passed away this week, I think 8 years ago. It's been a long time, so we'll hear from Genaro, his last clip. 47 hours before he passed away, he appeared on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, WBC Boxing TV. That was probably one of the toughest interviews I've ever done in my life. I was crying on the air. It wasn't pretty, but the bottom line is it had to be done. I miss him. He was the classiest man. Nobody has ever said anything bad about Genaro Hernandez. Nobody has ever, I mean, not even the guys that fought him. I mean, that's how gentlemanlike he was, but the straight up, We lost a good guy when Gennaro checked out. Of course, that was some rare form of cancer 8 years ago. And Rudy Hernandez will be here at 40 minutes past hour. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, on the line from the Bronx, the Bronx bomber himself, Socrates Palmer, boxing's PhD. Oscar De La Hoya, cocaine, tough guy that wears ladies' panties, wants to come back and fight Canelo Alvarez. How can you comment on that?
Wow. You know what? Someone needs to speak to Oscar and say, I'm not against you coming back and fighting, but Canelo Alvarez may be a little bit too much, you know, at this stage in your life. You know, the only thing bigger than Oscar's accomplishments are his ego. I don't think it's for the money, although, you know, for rich people, you can never have enough. And obviously there is a grudge between him and Canelo, but, you know, there's a difference between being brave and stupid. And I don't think that a fight with Canelo Alvarez is a good idea for Oscar or a good idea for Canelo. It's a no win. I mean, what does Canelo Alvarez gain by beating up a fighter who's been shot? You know, Manny Pacquiao showed that, you know, what, about 10 years ago? I mean, it's not worth it on either end. I'm not against Oscar making a comeback against someone somewhat at his level, but, I don't think anyone wants to see Oscar get beat up.
Somebody shot me a texture. Instead of trunks, should he wear panties? And what color should they be?
Ouch.
My God, I can't believe they're brutal.
Someone will make them. You know, my boy Chop Chop Corley used to wear, Chop Chop Corley used to wear panties. So I don't.
Yeah, yes. Now, you know what? I think we'd be better off just staying away from that and butt plugs and all that kind of good stuff just for the moment.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick on a different note. I saw an interview with Greg the Hammer Valentine. You know, my big kayfabe guy. And I saw an interview with Greg Valentine this week on YouTube. It's been cut in the last couple of weeks. They sliced into about like 1,000 different pieces. But I don't think anybody's more real than Greg. I don't know if you get a chance to see him ever, but as far as talking the talk, he was Mr. Kayfabe, and he felt you should stay true to the game. He didn't like taking jobs for people, and he explained when he wouldn't do a job. I mean, he explained the whole business there in about 20 minutes.
Well, he's a second-generation wrestler, you know, and back then it was quote-unquote real, you know, and guys took their profession serious. And Greg the Hammer Valentine, he's great on interviews, you know. Big cannabis advocate. You could tell he's very mellow during the interviews. And
is that why you can't remember nothing?
It seems that
I saw him buzz out a couple times. And doing the same thing myself, I haven't got no problem. Okay, Shakur Stevens is the winner tonight. Let's talk about the build-up now for Wilder and Fury, the third fight. How do you build that fight after the second fight was so dominating, so one-sided? In the first fight, you know, it was dominating and one-sided too, except for a couple of punches.
You know, it's a buildable fight, because the factor that Deontay Wilder has, the X factor, which is his knockout power. And it's a rematch that really is unnecessary. We clearly know who got the better of the two fights. But that's why contracts are drawn up. The arbiter said, hey, you know, you got to abide by this. Deontay Wilder is still holding on to his conspiracy theory about the gloves. So let's settle it once and for all. Can Deontay Wilder catch lightning in the bottle? It's possible. But Tyson Fury is, I think, at this point, really laser focused. And I think he's going to do a number on Deontay Wilder.
Wilder also claimed that Mark Breland, the 1984 Olympic gold medalist at welterweight, the guy was like basically unbeaten as an amateur. I mean, he lost that one fight. I think he beat the guy in a rematch. But the bottom line is Mark was untouchable. I mean, Mark was really a good guy, and he showed me class throughout his entire life and his career. I've known him since 84. And I don't remember him swearing. I don't remember him drinking. I don't remember him smoking any weed. I mean, he was just like the cleanest guy I've ever come in contact with in my life. So in my life, as far as maybe in boxing. So when Deontay Wilder said that he threw volumes in his drinking water in between rounds and this and he drugged him, you know, during the fight. I mean, maybe Mark can't slap him, but I would have sued him.
You stole the words out of my mouth. Mark Breland is a gentleman. He is one of those guys in New York that's kind of like just everyone likes him. You know, I don't think he's ever screwed anybody over. He definitely should get a lawyer and sue Deontay Wilder's pants off, you know, for defamation, and just put him through the process, you know? Just, you know, you don't play with people's names, especially when it comes to things like that. I think Deontay Wilder has come off like a total bozo, and now he's training with a friend. Basically, they're running these videos on Instagram of them playing patty cake, Malik Scott, and somehow it's supposed to give us some sort of gauge on his chance of beating Tyson Fury. I hope Mark Breland gets himself a lawyer and sues Deontay Wilder for defamation and everything under the sun. Very bad things. I mean, aside from that, he's potentially endangering Mark Breland's future because he's a trainer. You know, if I hear this, you know, what young fighter is going to want to mess with Mark Breland? You know, Mark has a very good case.
Yeah, without a doubt, especially, you know, Deontay has got a platform to speak on. Just, how could I put it? You know, Breland was an individual unlike anybody else. They had annuities set up. Shelly Finkel set up annuities. Shelly Finkel, the manager, maybe the greatest manager of all time as far as getting his fighters money. But he set up these annuities for Mark Breland, Terrell Biggs, Evander Holyfield, Pernell Whitaker, and that entire team. And they all broke into their annuities except Mark Breland. I think Mark was going to get either 50 grand or 100 grand a year for life when he turned 50. But they all broke into it. Much like Roberto Duran did when Carlos Ulloa set up an annuity for him. They can't keep it.
Well, that shows you Mark's brains. Maturity. Like I said, you know, it's just evil to mess with somebody's gross, future gross, potential gross earnings. It's not cool. I think that Deontay Wilder is as smart as a box of rocks, and he probably will have his last stand on July 24th.
Okay. Alex Ariza is going to be on the show tomorrow. What should I ask Mr. Alex Ariza? Double A, I call him.
Alex Ariza. Well, I'll tell you what. Very few people have had the career he's had. I mean, he worked with Manny Pacquiao. He worked with Floyd Mayweather. I believe he also worked with,
Oscar?
No, Diego Corrales. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been around some of the biggest names in the sport and in MMA. He was, Orlovsky, the heavyweight. He also worked with him. He's had quite a run, you know, and he's a very good interview. I think you guys are going to hit it off.
You know,
so good guy, Alex.
You brought up Diego Corrales. You know, he and I had a hot and cold relationship. I was with him as an amateur, and then he became champ, and he threw his wife down a flight of stairs and drug her back up the stairs by her hair. So we had issues over that. He went to jail for it, and then he got out, and of course the ill-fated comeback. And all his bottom line is he was just a mess. There was no doubt about it. But when he died on that motorcycle in Las Vegas, Gary Shaw and somebody else told me, Gary Shaw was the promoter, but somebody else told me they thought it was suicide, that he drove into the intersection on purpose.
That's not the first time I've heard that either. You know, he went head first into a truck, was it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
With no helmet on.
No helmet on. He was an interesting cat. You know, I've heard some stories about him also. Very ornery when he was not training, smoked cigarettes, drank beer. You know, he's just a strange dude. And it's funny because he had this frail built, very soft voice, but inside the ring, a vicious puncher, you know.
You know, he and I had some moments when we were like loving each other and hating each other. And at the end of the day, I just sort of felt bad for him because I thought that the fight with Jose Luis Castillo did so much to him as far as residual damage was concerned that he can never ever return. Anyway, I wish you the very best. You are the man, Socrates Palmer. Say hello to the entire family, of course. We wish you guys the best, man. Stay tight in New York City.
Love you, brother. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, this is the Saturday edition, Saturday 11 a.m. Pacific time. Next up, we'll go into Junaro Hernandez in depth and talk about the guy that was Chicanito. He was everybody's friend. He just was. I mean, nobody I know, even the guys that fought him liked him. I mean, how can you have that? This is the world of professional boxing. Guys that fought him, that he beat, liked him. That's how good a class act that Junaro was. Next up, Rudy Hernandez on WBC Boxing TV.
Now, more of Ring Talk
with Pedro Fernandez.
My thing is that, you know what, we're all special. We know, like you said, nobody deserves to go out like this. And unfortunately, my card was dealt with, you know, having to go out like this. And, well, you know, all I can say is that I had 45 great, great, wonderful years of life. I had 20 good, wonderful, great people behind me throughout my boxing career, which is all the fans, all you guys from the press. You know, I love you guys. I appreciate all the everything you guys ever did for me.
That was a rough day, no doubt about that. I think it was June 5th, 2 days before he passed away. I'm talking about Gennaro Hernandez, El Chicanito. Of course, let's take it to the Ring Talk phone lines, WBC TV phone lines. Take it to L.A. and, of course, bring in Rudy Hernandez. Rudy, how's life treating you, man?
How you guys doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Did you hear that little clip on your brother there?
Yeah, I got wind of it.
Yeah, you know, we miss him. He was with me till the end, man. I mean, me and him were tight a long time, and anytime that I needed a guest, he told me you can call me, man, late night, in the middle of the night, call me anytime you want. But that last interview we did 2 days before he passed, I think it was June 4th, it brought me to tears.
He was different. You know, he never felt that being a world champion made him any special or made him better than anybody else. He just walked a different walk.
You know, even the guys that fought him, I explained this a little earlier, even the guys that fought him liked him. I mean, did he have any enemies? I mean, there's nobody that I've ever come in contact with that ever said, you know, Gennaro's a jerk, Gennaro's this, Gennaro's that. Nobody's ever said anything ill about him. He might be the only guy in the history of boxing that applies to.
What a loser, huh? You know, man, my brother was just different. He just never believed that he was better than anybody else. It was just a sport, and he was in it, and he was in it for the money.
Okay.
You know, he really didn't like the sport, but he ended up having respect and liking the sport after he retired.
Okay.
And it used to be really frustrating because we never really got to see how good he could have been had he really liked it.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. 38-2, 17 KOs. The only losses to Floyd Mayweather and Oscar De La Hoya, both Hall of Fame certains, no doubt about that. So why isn't Gennaro mentioned when it comes to Hall of Fame guys? I don't hear that. Why?
Again, because he was a nice guy. I mean, like, I don't. Sometimes I don't know. I don't know why you got a few people that are in the Hall of Fame that I think my brother was better than them, but they're in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's at the end of the day, it's opinions and it's people that vote, and you know, they do what they do.
Okay.
But my brother's no longer here, so it's not as relevant as he used to be. I was hoping that he would probably get in while he was alive, because it was just it would have been a recognition for everything that he had done. But, you know, he's no longer here. So.
Well, you know, he's still around with me, and we still remember him often and very positively. There's no doubt about that. So what are you doing now? You're training fighters in L.A. still?
Yes, I have one kid that, unfortunately, he's 108 pounds, so that doesn't help a lot. But he's a really good fighter, and I've been reaching out to promoters, and I just can't catch a break with him because, again, he's 108 pounds. And my thing was that, and I keep telling guys that these promoters and matchmakers that if my guy isn't fighting for a world title within his five or six fights or seven, then we have no business in the sport. So we'll gracefully retire and leave the sport.
Rudy, I got a question for you. At 108 pounds, 105 pounds, 112 pounds, you don't see a whole lot of knockouts because of the fact the gloves are so big compared to the fighters, okay? I mean, they are big. What if we cut down on the size of gloves, maybe to 4-ounce gloves or maybe 5-ounce gloves for guys 105, 108 pounds? Do you think that would pick up the excitement level a bit?
I think you'd get arrested, man, for even coming up with such an idea.
Well, but por qué? Because, man, I mean, you want to make, you want to, listen.
We live in a, We live in a bitch ass community. I mean, so, today's era is no longer what, you know, it used to be. Like, for instance, okay, look, my dad's dad was a man's man. My dad was a tough SOB. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of just a little bit weaker on the sense where, you know, my children had choices. Now the kids today, come on, man, you know, like, God forbid if you even give them a dirty look, they need therapy.
Good point. Or they pull out a gun on you. Pound for pound, Canelo Alvarez, the best in boxing right now. Who would be number two on Rudy's list?
I'm sorry, but my number one pick is Naoya Inoue. Not Canelo.
Even
Terrence Crawford number two,
yeah,
and Canelo number three.
Okay, Inoue got the facial bones, the orbital bones, broken by Donaire a couple of years ago. What'd you think of Donaire pulling that upset off that upset a fortnight ago?
Oh, that was a great win. I was really happy for Nonito. Nonito's a, you know, like my brother, man. They're just like really nice guys and good for the sport because they, you know, they bring it. They're never. Win, lose, or draw, they come to work. They don't treat the public or the fans of, you know, of watching a good fight. And Nonito did a great job, and he's you know, he's champion of the world again.
Yeah. Well, Nonito
well deserved and well earned.
Donaire smelled blood, and he moved like a shark. I mean, he saw the opportunity. He went for the kill. More power to him. I mean. 38 years old, you know, and I thought maybe this would turn out the other way because of the fact the other guy was younger and he was unbeaten and this and that, but it didn't work out that way. In fact, I think the opponent seemed to be like freaked out once he got hit in the face. It's like, what's this all about? I don't think he's ever been hit before.
I thought he had a pretty good chance of winning that fight, you know, because I guess styles make fights, and the fact that, if Nonito still had, I believe that as long as he had some gas left in that tank, he had a really good chance of winning.
Wow. All right. Rudy Hernandez, I wish you the best. Continued success with a 108-pounder. You think I should be arrested for talking about smaller gloves. But here's what's up. If you've got guys weighing 160 pounds wearing 10-ounce gloves, and you guys got guys weighing 108 pounds wearing 8-ounce gloves, Rudy, the size isn't commensurate with the size. In other words, the gloves should fit the boxer.
Oh,
you feel me?
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I wouldn't mind. You know what's crazy? Look, okay, I fought at 100 and my pro debut was 137.5 pounds. I think that's what I weighed for my pro debut. And I fought with 6 ounce gloves. Yeah. They were like, I kid you not, those gloves must have been used like over 3 years. The paint was pretty much off of the gloves and at the Olympic Auditorium. My pro debut, 6 ounce gloves, man. And I'm 137 pounds. I was wrong with it.
Yeah, I remember boxing with some Everlast 8s. And I remember my trainer taking me over in the corner before the fights and rubbing on the gloves, rubbing the padding away from the knuckles on both hands, rubbing the padding away from the knuckles on both hands. So that was our little hustle. And then, of
what
course,
a cheater.
Well, I mean, I'm not, I don't think that's cheating. I'm just doing what I'm doing. Is that cheating?
No. Now you get busted.
No. You really think that's cheating? No, I mean, like, pushing the gloves.
Back in the day, it was a common practice. Everybody did it. Bottom line, everybody did it. And I've always said this, you know, a 22 is a 22. If you don't punch hard, you're never going to be a big puncher. If you're a 22, a 38, or a 45, you know, either one of those, you know, like if you have the power, you're going to punch. I don't care what gloves you wear.
Okay. Shakur Stevenson in action tonight. Are you impressed with him, the undefeated lad?
He's a bad dude, man. He's a really good fighter. I think he's maybe not the most likable guy, but good fighter, really good fighter.
The most likable guy today has to be Manny Pacquiao. There's no doubt about it. Taking on Errol Spence, Manny went for this fight. I mean, they sort of sought it out because I guess it paid the most money. Does he have a chance?
Of course he has a chance. Of course. Look, what makes Manny special is that he's the shorter guy, and he's pretty quick. He's a southpaw, and he hits from all angles. And they underestimate him. They think that I think that because he's a lot smaller or a guy that just moved up in weight and fights in these different divisions that, you know, that they're gonna, as they're younger, they feel like they have the advantage. Well, they have the advantage on youth,
yeah,
but on experience and will, that's where it all comes.
All right.
I don't know how long we're gonna have Errol Spence as a fighter. I think that the fact that, you know, even though he had that accident, it hasn't really changed his mindset as to being a true professional 24/7. You know, he still was out and about after the accident, after his last fight.
Yeah.
He still went out and got, you know, a little intoxicated.
Well, you know, he always looks like he's, I mean, if ever there was a guy that looks like a cannabis guy to me, he looks like he's always stoned. I mean, every time I see the guy, I look at him and say, Errol Spence looks like he's smoking some good Girl Scout cookies or something like that.
And you think that's going to last? As an athlete?
No, not as an athlete, no doubt about that. Now, Mayweather making all that money last week, was it good for the game?
Good for his game, yes. Of course it was.
Not his game.
You know, look, I look at it this way. Any fighter who can fight, any YouTuber or whatever, I don't care what it is, and can make this ridiculous amount of money, good for him. Get it. Take it. Because you know damn well that there's not one single boxer out here. Well, there may be a couple of boxers out here that are being taken care of by somebody, but nobody takes care of fighters after they retire. Nobody cares if they eat or they can pay their car note or their mortgage. Nobody gives a rat's ass about them. So whatever they can get it.
You know, I'll tell you the exception to the rule there. You may disagree with me on this one, but Kid Gavilan told me in Miami one day, I did a little TV show down there, and he told me that Jose Suleiman had been paying his bills for 20 years.
Like I said, there's a few exceptions. And that are taken care of. Like Bob Arum offered Richie Sandoval a job.
Yeah.
And he retired him, and you know, like, and Bob Arum and Mr. Honda helped my brother out on this. You know, my brother when he was diagnosed with cancer, my brother didn't have to worry about where his next meal was going to be coming from because Bob Arum, you know, got my brother in as a commentator. And not only that, but he took it even a few steps ahead. He paid for my brother's medical expenses while he was going through the cancer.
Wow.
For 3 years. Yeah. You know, my brother didn't have to worry
Who was the publicist? Herb Goldman?
No, Lee Samuels.
Who was it? No. There was a guy named Herb in L.A. that used to write for one of the papers a little bit, and he was tight with Gennaro. No?
I don't remember him. I don't.
All right. Well, maybe my, you know, I'm old too. Anyway, Rudy, it's always a pleasure, man. I love your brother and I respect you. And what can I say? I can't say no more than other than the fact that when he left this planet, he left it an honorable man.
I appreciate you, Pedro. Keep up the great job, the work you do, man. And stay safe.
Rudy Hernandez on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Back after the break. Tower of Power, only so much oil. Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
I hope that you understand that not one single person, not one single committee can do anything for boxing. It is absolutely necessary that we all get together. We work together. We respect each other. we like and love each other.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You know, when we went to that last break, we played Only So Much Oil in the Ground. Of course, Lenny Williams, my buddy on lead there for the Tower of Power back in like 1975, 76. Get this. I pay $3.79 a gallon for gas here in San Francisco. That's like the cheapest gas in the entire city, if not the Bay Area, right? Gas was going for $5.50 a gallon yesterday. I kid you not. And there was a line for people to get gas at $5.50 a gallon when the place down the street for $3.79 didn't have a line. Does that make any sense to you? Only in America. You, speaking of only in America, Don King, of course, is the man himself, going to turn 90 in August. Of course, it's going to have a big party for him. I think it's going to have to take place down there in Florida. If he's healthy enough to have the party, they're going to have it, no doubt about it. But Don King, of course, the wire-haired wonder. June 12th, 1978, Kenny Norton, of course, and Larry Holmes engaging in a 15-round fight, of course, in Las Vegas, the Caesars Palace Sports Pavilion. Holmes won with a big 15th round, of course, took that title. The rest was history. Ken Norton, the only heavyweight champion in history, never to win the title. They sort of gave it to him. But the bottom line is Norton and Holmes hooked it up on this day in 1978. In 1989... Sugar Ray Leonard, of course, my training partner for that fight, no doubt about that, with Tommy the Hitman Hearns. I guess I didn't train him well enough because he got lost. Got dropped a couple times, got his ass whooped, no doubt about that. But Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard on this day, June 12th, 1989, a draw, a very controversial draw in Las Vegas, no doubt about that. Until next time, don't forget, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, and iHeartRadio.